Hey listeners, quick question. Are you tired of overpaying for your mobile plan? I've got the answer. Ting Mobile. Ting Mobile is all about flexibility and savings. You only pay for what you use, no crazy fees or overages. It's perfect for those who want control over their phone bill without sacrificing quality. Say goodbye to bloated phone bills. Go to milwaukeemafia.com/ting. Ting Mobile. Mobile that makes sense.
You're listening to Milwaukee Mafia, your podcast dose of Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Milwaukee Mafia podcast. I'm Eric.
I'm Gavin.
And Gavin, we're back again.
Yes.
He's got his notes in front of him ready to go. What are we talking about?
I do. And these notes are really long.
They are really long.
So I'm not going to read them in detail. I'm just going to kind of refer to them. This might actually be more casual than I usually do it.
Yeah, the notes appear to be about 6 pages long for everybody's reference.
Yeah, and I normally cap out at 4. So this is Dominic Frinzy runs for governor.
That's right. We discussed this a little bit last week.
Yeah, I said I was going to do it, and I'm doing it. So Dominic Frinzy runs for governor in 1964.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm going to kind of breeze through this because I was super thorough putting these notes together, and people don't need me to be reading off campaign speeches and stuff. So, you know, again, as always, the notes will be on the website after.
Does your notes go into who Dominic Frinzy is? Because before we go into the story, maybe a refresh. I know that we've mentioned that name on numerous occasions,
but a little refresh
of who exactly he is, it would be a good
thing. Well, thank you, because yes, that's... I am not good about that, and I forget that sometimes people jump in without starting from episode 1 and listening all the way through.
Or they just don't remember. I mean, 89 episodes.
Yeah. All right. So Dominic Frinzy is an attorney in Milwaukee. He is the primary attorney used by mob members, and he hangs out very closely with Frank Balistrieri. So prominent attorney in Milwaukee. And, you know, and just to be fair, even though for the purpose of this podcast, he is like the mob attorney, he does other things too. Like,
he also has other clients.
He has a legitimate
law practice. Yeah. He just happens to have one client named Frank Balistrieri.
Yeah. He's got other clients. He's a big supporter of the opera. He does other things. So the latest John Doe probe against gambling wrapped up in March 1964. This is kind of a regular thing in Milwaukee. Every so often they have this John Doe probe where they just open it up and get people to testify about gambling, and then a bunch of people get charged with gambling offenses or cops for taking bribes and things like that. So it's pretty regular. This one wraps up in March 1964, leads to dozens of arrests, and Dominic Frinzy gets a lot of headlines out of this because he was the defense attorney for many of the people arrested, and he thought this probe was dumb. He thought this was completely uncalled for, very vocal about it. So he's kind of riding this moment.
Just more or less because it's not an appropriate way to bust people? Is that kind of the idea you think?
I'm not exactly sure on the nuance of what it is. He's not a fan of the John Doe probe, but he kind of like, he hedges on that where he's like, I'm not against the idea of John Doe. I just don't like the way they do it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not exactly sure what his issue is, but.
So it's not necessarily he's completely against the practice. He just feels like there's something about the way we're doing it that's not right. Like if we change this one thing, I'd be okay with it, but. In the way it is done now, it's done unfairly.
Yeah, basically. And I don't know if this has changed in the last 60 years. John Doe probes still a thing in Wisconsin. I'm pretty sure it's the only state that actually does them.
And they actually still do them, or is it still on the law books? But
no, they still do them.
Really?
And I don't think they do them as often as they used to. But the thing, like at this time, one issue that I know that he had with it was really lenient about who could call one. Like a judge could call one, a prosecutor could call one. And his issue was, he goes, sometimes I fill in as a court commissioner. And he goes, when I'm working as a court commissioner, I have the authority to call a John Doe. Mm-hmm. He's like, there's no reason for that. So I think that's, I don't know if the law has changed, but they don't really do that anymore. Like the last big one in Wisconsin was like 10 years ago. And it's usually, you know, a high profile judge that calls it. It's not just random people calling for these things. So on April 9th, about a month after this wraps up, Dominic Frinzi, age 42, announces that he's going to run for governor. He's going to run as a Democrat. The current governor who was running for re-election was already a Democrat. That's John Reynolds. So he's decided to challenge the incumbent, which is kind of an unusual thing because presumably that should be the guy that he likes.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to run against him. Sort of a lot of stuff here he's talking about. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he goes like, since his election, our present governor has apparently been unconcerned with the will of the majority of the people. He has become obsessed with pet programs, completely out of touch with the wishes of the majority of the citizens of the state of Wisconsin, as clearly indicated in the crushing defeat of his ill-fated proposals. And he goes on and on and on.
So basically normal government. Yes. Normal political banter.
Yes, when he goes into political mode, like, it's funny to me how much of this sounds the same way that anybody would do it now, and how much it doesn't mean anything. You know, and maybe that's my bias, and I'm sorry for that, but like going out and saying that, you know, the governor or whoever doesn't follow what the people want him to do, like that's cheap.
That's cheap.
You can say that about everybody ever.
I mean, come on. If you're going to make such a bold statement, follow it up with some, you know, like examples of this. You know, like where did this guy do that thing and we were all against it? Because chalk is cheap. But that's the way politics works. So,
yeah, he's got a few specific things. But I mean, generally, he speaks pretty vague.
I do just whenever I hear a politician speak, I find it humorous, like just the way they talk, and you know, because you have to be so careful about everything you say,
yeah,
that it's just the funniest thing in the world to me. So
it is weird. that the same week that he announced his candidacy, he was coincidentally, or not, but coincidentally meeting with Alabama Governor Wallace, George Wallace, at a hotel in Milwaukee. The Alabama governor was there because he was running for president at the time. Now, according to Frinzi, he just was coincidentally in that hotel, and then he got ushered in and met the governor. Other people were like, this might have been the thing that sparked him to announce, but he kind of denies that. And he sort of tries to distance himself from this event because Governor Wallace, like, I don't know if people remember this guy anymore, again, 60 years later, but he was pretty notorious because he was, again, the governor of Alabama, and he was absolutely against integration. Like, the courts had ordered segregation to end,
mm-hmm.
and as governor, he personally, like, stood on school steps and tried to physically stop black kids from going into the schools.
Wow.
Like, he did not keep that to himself.
I'm curious, do you know how did he do as a presidential candidate?
Well, he certainly didn't win.
Yeah, well, yeah, we know that, but
I don't know how well he did, but he didn't win. But he did stay on as governor for a very long time. Okay. Alabama, he was very popular. So the FBI, of course, is watching him, Dominic Frinzi, and they're asking around, and the informants are all like, he's not serious here. Like, this is just a joke. Like, the only reason he's probably doing this is because he's trying to get free advertising or something. He's like, this guy has no political experience. He has no chance at all of being governor. So it's like, okay. At the end of April, Frinzi said that he was going to stump the state while running for governor. He was going to hit every county in Wisconsin, 72 counties. until the time of the election, he was going to step back from his law practice, not go to work at all, but just focus on campaigning. And this was actually a pretty big deal, not necessarily the stepping back part, but the stumping the state thing. Because, like, in our lifetime, I know, like, Russ Feingold made a big deal of that, that he was going to hit every county in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. But traditionally, like, you didn't have to do it. I mean, you still don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's kind of a big deal because it's not really a secret that you can win governor if you, like, take Madison and Milwaukee and maybe pick up a few other places. Like, you don't have to go to Bayfield.
To all these different places because their vote really doesn't
matter. No disrespect
matter.
To Bayfield, but, like, if you 100% vote against a guy, he can still win. So, you know, this whole trying to actually meet everybody everywhere was a fairly new idea. So, pretty cool. The Milwaukee Sentinel speculated in May that Frenzy was not serious about this. They said that he was just trying to stir up trouble. They said that the reason that this had started was because he was upset that he wasn't appointed to a county judge seat by Governor Reynolds and said it went to somebody else. They said that this was probably revenge because Reynolds had launched one of the anti-gambling John Doe probes, and that Frenzy was an attorney for many of those targets. The Sentinel does not think this is legit. They think this is just him going out there and just blasting the governor over, like, personal matters.
I'm curious at this point in time. So can he... Does he have the name during this period of time as being the mob's attorney? And... obviously, he has other clients, but is he doing shady things for the mob?
He's not doing shady things.
He's
not doing shady things. Evidence of him ever doing shady things.
So he's just legitimately a lawyer. Like, he is just Frank Ballastri.
He's legitimately a lawyer, but he does have that reputation because he hangs out with these guys on his off time as well.
Okay. So he's also friends with them too.
Yeah. So he's close. Also in this article, they pointed out this very unusual thing where Milwaukee County Judge Harvey Nealon had a Dominic Frenzy for Governor bumper sticker on his car. And when they asked him, he said, well, I think he's a capable and honest person, and he should run for governor. Well, the judge got blasted pretty hard for that. not for saying he's capable and honest, but for having the bumper sticker, because they're like, whether this is legal or not, there's some major ethical issues here. One, because the judge now has, like, a political sticker on his car, and judges have political opinions, but they're not really supposed to like tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And second, Frenzy is an attorney who often appears in court.
And oh yeah.
so like, if you're like, yeah, this is the guy I like, anytime that Frenzy would now be in Judge Nealon's court, people would look at it different.
Yeah, that is a very valid point.
Because they'd be like, did he win that case because he did a good job, or did he win that case because they're friends?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so probably not illegal, but definitely was not a great choice by the judge. But end of May, Frenzy spoke at the Parent Teacher Association in Forest Junction, Wisconsin.
Nice. So there was like five people there.
Five people there. But this is when he announced one of his big plans. He wanted to start an entire state department to prevent juvenile delinquency, and he wanted to model it after the Peace Corps. He said, what we need to do is we need to give the youth of our state some responsibility, and we fail to give it to them. If we did this, we'd have fewer problem youth, youth crimes, because they'd be busy doing constructive things. And we should let them know that, you know, their energy would be valued and appreciated. And so this is when he really kicks off that idea. And I, you know, I like this idea.
Well, this is, okay, so I want to talk about this idea because on one angle, I can see the appeal of this idea.
Mm-hmm.
on the other angle, depending on how it's put together, I could just see this like troubled youth child indentured servant to servitude. You know, like,
yeah,
like it could also be turned really badly too.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. So I don't know how this would work. I don't know the details of it, but I've always liked the idea. This is me giving a political opinion. I apologize. I don't think this is really a political opinion, but you know, like how when you join the military, you can get like the GI Bill and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've always liked the idea of having other options, being like, hey, you want to be put on a crew for 2 years where, like, you go around and you clean up state parks and things like that.
Actually, that, to me, is a brilliant idea. And then you're saying, like, would you pay the people to do it? Or would this just be, like, a thing you could do after college or after high school to get money to go to college or something?
Could be either way. But the point being is just, you know, and there probably are other options. I'm probably talking out of my butt here. But I'm just saying, like, some other programs where you can do service for your state or your country that doesn't involve military service. So, like, you know, it could be being put on a road crew or something, you know, like,
and
you could cut infrastructure costs down by hiring students to do it and then paying them on the back end through college grants.
And I can also tell you, and I don't know if I've ever told you this before, Gavin, but when I was in the military, it was explained to me by numerous people, and whether any of them were qualified enough to truly know this, but take it what I'm saying for what it's worth. But the GI Bill is actually profitable for the VA.
Really?
Because 80% of people, when you take the GI Bill, you have to pay in to get it.
Okay,
so they subtract something off of your paycheck for X amount of it to be a part of the GI Bill, and 80% of the people never use it.
Really?
So it's actually a net positive to the VA to have the GI Bill because of all that money coming in. Yeah.
I did not know that. That's
I mean, to think about it. Well,
so the people who want to use it, it's helpful, and the people who don't, they're benefiting the VA.
Yeah. I guess the people that don't want to use it are benefiting the people that do use it. You know.
Oh yeah, too. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
okay. But anyway, yeah. So like the idea of like giving the youth options of doing things and keeping them busy. Like, I generally like the idea. In June, Frinzy formally filed for governor. Apparently, up to now, he's kind of campaigning, but he didn't have to actually file his paperwork. He files it in June. He was required to file 5,000 signatures, which he did. But he told the press that he had actually gathered 120,000 signatures.
Wow.
He apparently was popular. I don't know. Then he gives one of his great political lines. He says, "It is my belief that our state government can and should run on fewer dollars and more sense." I think that's a great political line.
I like that line too, yeah.
Fewer dollars and more sense. Like, well done, whoever wrote that line. So good on him. All right, he had a political rally at the Eagles Club, which, you know, is now the Eagles Ballroom.
Nice.
Brought in 600 people. He came out on stage to a band and a donkey wearing a sign around its neck that said, "I want a leader." He spoke about his opposition to the selective sales tax. Apparently, the governor had pledged to get rid of the sales tax, but it ended up keeping it. I'm not exactly sure what the sales tax was at this time compared to what it is now. So there might be some specific issues that they had with it, but that was something that came up.
Let me break in one second quick here. This is kind of off the topic, but I'm thinking you might know the answer to this because I'm just curious. So you said the Eagles Club, which is now the Eagles Ballroom.
Yes.
I think of the Eagles Ballroom today as not a place you would have a political rally.
Right.
So back in the day, was the Eagles Ballroom like some sort of elegant thing?
No,
it was always just kind of a... it's a shit, crappy place or anything, but it's just, you know, it's just a rock concert venue.
Well, it was reported at that this campaign event, the room was hot. the 600 people there had their tables overflowing with pitchers of beer, popcorn, potato chips, and pretzels.
Okay.
So this is not necessarily a classy place.
Okay.
But this is off the mark, but because you asked, the Eagles Ballroom, like, originally was like a concert place for like big bands, and it had, I don't even remember what the name was called. I think it was called like the Million Dollar Ballroom or something. And that's what they had there. Then it got sold to the Eagles, and the Eagles is like the old guy group. They probably weren't old guys then, but now it's mostly old guys. The old guy group who, like, you know, they do community service and stuff like that. This was their clubhouse.
Okay.
And then eventually they sold it and it became a music venue again, but they kept the Eagles name on it.
Okay.
So the reason it's called the Eagles Ballroom is it used to be run and owned by the Fraternal Order of Eagles.
Okay.
So.
Wow, that must have been a nice clubhouse when they had it as a clubhouse, because that place is huge.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it would have been pretty sweet. So he's doing this thing. He says he's going to bring heavy industry to Wisconsin, which is something that every governor would say. He would create legislation that would allow savings and loan institutions to invest their capital in state industries. Don't necessarily understand that, but could be a good idea.
Well played. I don't know what it is, but I'm sure it probably could have been a good
idea. I don't know. I need to know the details on that. Like, what does that mean? He probably explained it, but the way the paper reported it was like, okay. So I don't know, like, how that benefits the savings and loan, but if they have stuff that they can invest in state industries, that sounds good, I guess. I don't know. So he spoke to these people. Pretty good turnout from local people. Among those 600 people present, there were some assemblymen, district attorneys, judges. So some notable people were there. In August, he spoke to 500 people at a $25 per plate dinner at the Crystal Ballroom in Milwaukee, where he was introduced to the audience by his priest. Kind of an odd thing, but did that.
I bet you that back in that day, that wasn't that uncommon, though.
Yeah. He said that the current governor was high on promises and low on performance.
He's got some witty comments that he makes, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that was pretty good. I don't want Wisconsin just to vote against a governor. I want Wisconsin to vote for a governor. Yeah, see, this he knows. This is like classic politics here. He's really good. I want to have a Democratic Party, not a party of kingmakers and bosses. Yeah, just great. Just great.
I'm assuming this guy doesn't win, and I'm wondering why not, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got some good one-liners.
Yeah, so apparently at this time also, Governor Reynolds reclassified Wisconsin state colleges into being universities. This is something I don't really know much about either. This is all like this minutia of state history that I don't know. And he said this because of this, Wisconsin now had more universities than either New York, California, Michigan, or Illinois. And he felt that this was wrong because a college is like where people go to learn things, and a university is something more than that. It's like not just a college, but also a research institution. And he goes, by doing this, instead of having a fine university and 10 good state colleges, we're going to have a dozen fifth-rate, half-baked, so-called universities. So I'm thinking, like, what happened here is at this time, the University of Wisconsin was just Madison. And everything else, like UWGB, UW-Oshkosh, they weren't UWs.
They were just like Green Bay College or something.
Green Bay College, you know, or like Oshkosh Normal School, you know, all these other things that were run by the state but didn't have that university name. Why it matters what the name is, I don't know, but apparently it must affect the way the funding worked or something.
And I could just see that they looked at it as well, you're kind of degrading the term university in the state of Wisconsin.
You know what I mean? And there is that because, like, even now today, even though we call them all universities, like, we know that Madison is the big one.
Yeah, and we know that Madison is probably a step above all of them, right?
Right. So I think, like, he's coming from a point of view where he's like, no, like, these other places are not on that level. We couldn't call them that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe I'll go back through and I'll add stuff in here. Or maybe I won't, because that seems like a big detour. It's interesting to me, but it's kind of a detour from the focus of this podcast. All right. So, again, he pushes for his youth department. We can afford a department to protect our natural resources, but we can't afford a department for our human resources. We can afford a department of agriculture to protect our crops and our cows, but we can't afford a department to protect our people?
Wow, I gotta say, man, he's good.
He's good.
I wonder if you did like a write-up of any politician and put clips like that in, if I'd be like, oh yeah, they're good too. Or if this guy was just good.
Yeah.
Because he's just got a lot of good lines.
Yeah. Mid-August, he comes out with a new big idea. He's now pushing for lower traffic fatalities. And he's speaking to the local unions. He wants the unions to back him. But at the same time, he's kind of annoyed with the unions because they had recently pushed the governor to not expand the state patrol. Governor wanted to expand the state patrol, and the unions pushed back on that because they felt that if the state had more police, the police would be used to break strikes and beat up on the union. And, okay. Which is not, historically, is not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But Frenzy here is like, that's a thing of the past. They don't do that anymore. You guys don't have to be worried about that. So he's kind of talking them down. And so he's coming up with all these things. He says, this year, for the first time, Wisconsin traffic deaths are going to reach 1,000 deaths. He says, we've got to push for more safety patrol. We have to get manufacturers to install more safety devices in the cars. He pushed for the driving age to be raised to 18, which I can't imagine was popular to push for that. But his reasoning on that was that it would lower insurance rates.
Hmm. Interesting.
Because he goes, everybody knows that, like, the insurance rates are high because so many accidents happen to people 25 and under. And he goes, so if we just get rid of the 16, 17-year-olds, it should lower insurance rates across the board. His reasoning is good.
But, yeah, that is actually a solid reasoning.
But, yeah, I don't know. And he wanted to expand the freeway system and increase speed limits. While setting a minimum speed limit, which that's never happened, but so, like, he recognized, and this is something still today, people do not recognize this, and it is so annoying to me, and I will be on my soapbox for a second here. People always, like, blaming crashes on people speeding. That is not what causes crashes.
Okay.
So statistically, speeding does not cause crashes.
So what causes crashes?
Other things. Inattentive driving. Drunk driving, and actually people going under the speed limit cause more crashes than people going over the speed limit.
Really?
Yes.
Like that. That I can see. Because
the impeding traffic is what causes the issue. Not that the guy, like, if you're going like 100, like, that's a bit excessive. But the people going 10 over are not the people causing the accidents.
Right. And when you see somebody that is flying, it's more or less, if somebody's flying, it might be the fact that you see those people that go in and out between lanes and stuff.
Yeah.
That's the act that's going to cause the accident.
That's the problem.
It's not their speed.
Right. But yeah, expanding the freeway system. And this is, maybe this is me being dumb, but I actually just learned what a freeway was, like, in the last month or two. I always thought a freeway and a highway were the same thing. I learned they are not.
Well, is a freeway the one that doesn't have cross traffic and stuff?
That's
like
exactly
that?
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I just thought they were interchangeable terms. But yeah, freeway is when you have on and off ramps instead of just crossroads. So pushing for the expansion of those to make fewer cars going across speeding lanes of traffic makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's still pushing for this at his next meeting, really hammering down on the traffic thing. pushing for the youth to join his new clubs that he wants to do. And he's going on and on about that. So now this is when things get weird. At the end of August, the FBI is still kind of asking about him. And there's kind of a mix where some people are like, I think he's serious. I think he's joking. One informant said that 90% of his financial backing for governor came from the mafia in New York City.
Weird.
Which I'm pretty confident is crap.
Because a brilliant question would be, why would the mafia in New York care? Can you come up with a reasonable reason for that?
No. Like, the informant's reasoning is that he had worked as an attorney for Bill Bonanno, who was the son of the mob boss in New York. So he knew some of these New York guys. So it's not completely, like, nonsense. But it doesn't make any sense that they would back him.
Yeah, like, why? Maybe he had the resources to know the people, but why would they care?
Yeah, like, I mean, unless the idea here is that if the mafia can get a governor in any state that helps them in that state, I don't know. But and this is why sometimes it's really annoying that, like, you don't know who the informant is, because I want to know who this informant is.
Because you
not
might
because act- I not because I want to, like, expose them, but I want to be like, who is thinking this?
Yeah, and you immediately you might hear who the informant is, and immediately just be like, okay, yeah, that person is not a relevant or viable informant. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, if depending on the name, I'd be like, oh, well, that's really interesting. But more likely, I'd be like, yeah, what?
Well, how would he know anyways, right?
In early September, and the primary is coming up quick in September. In early September, Frinzi is speaking out publicly, really blasting the Democratic Party, saying he's being treated unfairly, saying that every time the party releases TV ads and literature and everything else, they're always promoting the governor, and they don't really promote him. And he's pretty mad about it. And, you know, and I can see this on both sides. Like, he's saying that they're still in primary mode. And in primary mode, there shouldn't be an assumption that the governor is going to be the candidate.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the governor is the current governor.
Yeah.
Like, he's sort of like the de facto leader of the party. I don't know why they wouldn't back him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much of this is him being legitimately upset and how much of this is him just, you know, causing a scene to get publicity again. He has a point.
He does definitely have a point, because that's really not fair.
It's not fair, but that's the same thing. As we record this right now, the incumbent for president is Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
There is another Democrat running against him in the primary. But he doesn't get a lot of coverage.
No.
It's the same concept. Like, the Democratic Party isn't going to exert a lot of resources to promote that guy.
Because they just kind of know that
we're
going to go with Biden in the end.
Yeah. So Frinzi kind of, like, suggests at this point that if he gets blasted, if he gets lost, poor phrasing on my part, if he loses the primary, he might consider running as an independent, going into the regular election as an independent. The state Democratic Party says Frinzi's received very fair treatment. All of his complaints are fancied. I would hope that Dominic Frinzi is a better Democrat than to threaten to run as an independent candidate, apparently in an anticipation that he's going to lose the primary. I would hope that he would accept the results of the primary. A couple days later, the Democratic state chairman, a man named Lewis Hansen, said that he believed an unholy alliance was supporting Dominic Frinzi's campaign. This is a great, great word there. Unholy alliance. He said that he believed that the Republican Party was pushing for Frinzi in order to weaken Reynolds in the primary. The goal, Hansen believed, was to destroy the anti-gambling laws. He also said that he believed that organized crime was backing Dominic Frinzi to weaken the gambling laws and to get legal gambling moved into the state. So he's like, I don't believe the Democrats are really backing this guy. I think this is a Republican strategy to knock out Reynolds. Was it? I don't know.
Have you ever looked into his, like, the possibility of Frank Ballastieri funding him at all as candidate? Because it seems like Dominic Frinzi would go to for money if he was going to run a candidacy, but
I'm sure he did, but I don't think it was like that big. Surprisingly, like that didn't really come up much.
Nobody really talked about his connections
news,
to the mob.
Not in the FBI files. Yeah, it did. Yeah, the mob stuff come up a little bit, but nothing like this is like Ballastieri's guy. Nothing like that, really.
Well, that's strange.
Yeah. Frinzi responded to the accusations that he was pro-gambling, and he said, was I the one who was behind the mysterious forces that caused Reynolds' special prosecutor to take a dive on the major case they brought to court? And by this, he's referencing that the attorney general of the state ordered 13 charges dropped against the head of the vice squad who had let gambling go. He goes, I'm not the one who dropped those charges. Mm-hmm. He goes, was I behind the mysterious forces on the state Supreme Court that decided 7-0 in the two cases brought before them in which they repudiated the means used in this diabolical investigation? So here he's like, we challenged it to the court and the court backed us 100%. Like, that's not my doing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that this is necessarily a strong thing of him saying I'm anti-gambling, but it definitely, he's kind of throwing the blame elsewhere, being like, if your John Doe failed, it wasn't me. Mm-hmm. He told the press that he expected a large backing from the labor unions in the state. He specifically expected the backing of the UAW, the United Auto Workers, in Kenosha, who had 16,000 members. It was said to be the largest union in the state. They had the American Motors plant there. He also expected that he was going to have backing from the Teamsters because he was friends with Teamsters, what's his actual, Secretary Treasurer Frank Ranney. I want to get his title right. Secretary Treasurer Frank Ranney, who oversaw 33,000 Teamsters.
And I recognize that name, so where would I... Has he come up?
Frank Ranney is definitely he is tight with Frank Ballastieri, and he later on gets really known for getting the unions to provide $1 million loans to Ballastieri
for the Vegas stuff.
For the Vegas stuff, other things, yeah.
Okay.
The primary was on September 8th. Frinzi received 102,000 votes in the Democratic primary. However, that was only 30% of the vote.
Wow, sweet.
So John Reynolds defeated him. Shortly after, Dominic Frinzi spoke to a group of the Wisconsin Distilled Spirits Executive Club at Chico's Barbecue in Milwaukee. After speaking, he opened the floor to questions, and people asked him about this unholy alliance. And he got pretty huffy about it. He said, I worked 43 years to build up my name and my reputation. I'm not going to let them destroy it. I challenged them to prove that I made a deal with Republican candidate Warren Knowles, that I would give him any support in exchange for his support in getting legalized gambling in Wisconsin. They have tried to create the impression that I'm going to bring organized crime and legalized gambling into Wisconsin. Before they even made the charge, I had gone on record opposing legalized gambling. I don't know where they're getting this claim from. I find it very ironic that this comes up while he's speaking at Chico's Barbecue. And Chico's Barbecue is owned and operated by Frank LaGalvo, who we've had a long, long history on this podcast of talking about all his mob connections and how he used to run brothels and everything else. So saying that you are not the mob candidate when you're speaking at a mafia-affiliated restaurant is odd. But at first he spoke to the press and said he wasn't sure if he was going to run as an independent. He said, I know people are circulating nomination papers for me, so if I want to, I have the backing of people. But then a few days later, he formally announced that he wouldn't. But he also said, I don't really intend to endorse Governor Reynolds either. He goes, Governor has not approached me to support him. He hasn't talked to me at all. He hasn't asked me if he can incorporate any of my ideas into his campaign. And he says if he doesn't want my supporters, I don't feel that I should support him. So an informant spoke to the FBI, and they said that Dominic Frinzi was depressed after losing the governor primary. Not so much that he lost the primary, because they kind of thought that was going to happen, but he was depressed because the governor had never even bothered to reach out to him or call him or anything. And he says, well, that really bummed him out, I guess. That again, I don't know who the informant was, but that sounds plausible to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe do a lot of people just run for governor to get their foot in the door of having communication with the governor? I don't know if that's a thing.
It could be a thing. I mean, definitely, I don't know, on the governor level, it probably works the same on the governor level, but definitely on like the presidential level, people run for president not necessarily to win, but just to get, you know, their name out there.
Yeah, and to get their platform out there,
basically. Get their platform out there, and then, you know, hope that in 4 years, people will be like, oh, I remember that person.
Yeah.
So, you know, could be similar. October 28th, shortly before the regular election, the general election, a group of Frinzi supporters met at Glorioso's on East Brady in Milwaukee. At the meeting, they passed a resolution urging Frinzi voters to switch sides and vote for Warren and Knowles, the Republican candidate. They highlighted that candidate's distinguished record that better qualified him to be governor. Different people were at this meeting. It's notable that Frinzi was not at this meeting. His campaign director was not at this meeting. So this was apparently an unofficial group of people, but it was big enough that it got the news coverage and stuff. Frinzi said he found out about the meeting after the fact, and he had no interest in dissuading or persuading them. He said he was not supporting Reynolds, but he would not openly endorse Warren Knowles either. So here's the thing now. It comes to the regular election, which at this point, like, I don't have it in my notes, but, you know, it's normal election time. It's like the first week of November. Mm-hmm. And this is how it goes down. Would you like to guess how it goes down?
What do you mean? Like
how the election goes.
I'm going to guess Warren Knowles wins.
Warren Knowles wins.
Yes.
And Warren Knowles wins by less than 1% margin.
Wow.
Now, I don't know that Frinzi changed the outcome of the election. There's no way that I can know that one way or the other. But I can tell you that Knowles won on a margin smaller than that 100,000 that voted for Frinzi. So if Frinzi's voters did switch sides, it was enough to flip the election.
Wow. Which could hypothetically suggest that this could have been something done with the Republican candidate to get him in, but
I don't personally believe that, but it definitely seems that
Frinzi going out
and speaking out against the governor, it does seem that it helped
Knowles.
It helped Knowles.
Yeah.
So here's what comes out of that. Frinzi is not governor. He does not win. Assuming he is actually a Democrat, his party does not win. Reynolds is now out of office and Knowles is governor. But Reynolds doesn't actually lose, because as soon as he's out, he gets appointed by the president, Lyndon Johnson, to be a judge on the federal court system in Wisconsin.
Okay.
So Reynolds loses the governor race, but he gets awarded a judge position on the federal court system, which is a lifetime appointment.
Okay.
So he didn't really lose. He didn't get to be governor, but he got a pretty sweet job.
Yeah, I'd say, but it doesn't. It seem like that. That seems like what happens to all politicians.
No, yeah, you know, like I'm not saying it's unusual. I'm just pointing out that the only loser here is Frinzy.
Mm-hmm.
Knowles wins a governor. Reynolds wins a judgeship. Frinzy gets nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So he has this campaign,
but
he gets nothing.
What if what he wanted was just to get Reynolds out of office?
If that was the case, then he succeeded.
Yeah, because then he won. So,
but I would then say that he also lost, because over the next decade or two, I will tell you, spoiler for this podcast, there will be many times that he has to go before the federal court in Milwaukee.
And Reynolds is sitting there.
So now John Reynolds is the judge in the federal court in Milwaukee. So Frinzy and Reynolds are going to be enemies for a while.
So this was just probably the worst possible outcome that Frinzy could have had.
Yeah.
For himself. So, and I assume he never ran for governor after that. This was a one-shot thing.
You would be wrong.
Oh, he does go do it again.
He
okay.
does it again.
Cool. Do we get to hear about that? Because
we'll see.
I think he's a wonderful politician. I want to hear his amazing one-liners that he has.
We'll see. I mean, if you want to hear it, we can do it. It'll be coming up pretty soon. But yeah, debatably, is this a Milwaukee Mafia episode? I don't know. But I think it qualifies, because Frinzy's a major figure on this podcast, you know, whether he wants to be or not. And this does shake up things as far as the politics go with who's governor and, again, who's this federal judge. And this is not a political podcast, but at the same time, that does have a bearing on how things are done, on the courts especially. The courts are a major part of how organized crime gets handled. So I think that this is really good background information to have going forward.
And I'm still tripped up on the philosophy that you said that, like, really never his mob connections ever came up during the election and things like that.
There was definitely it didn't come front and center. I think the papers were being polite about it, but you can definitely tell, like, by the end, like when he's given the talks, he's like, they're accusing me of bringing organized crime in. So like, it's not like the word isn't going around, but I think the papers were trying to not be blunt about it.
So it did eventually catch on, because it just seems weird to me that, I mean, was Dominic Frinzy just kind of like, to a person in Milwaukee,
mm-hmm.
was Dominic Frinzy like, was he like Frank Balistrieri's right hand man? Or to most people, was he just a lawyer? But it just so happens that the FBI happened to know that he was Frank Balistrieri's lawyer, so they were looking into him. So we always hear the government looking at this guy.
Yeah.
But to normal people, was he just another guy?
I couldn't say 100%, you know, not being there at the time. But I would generally believe that people knew that or thought that
he was
Frank's guy.
He was Frank's guy.
I think that was, you know, and again, like he did more. He was involved in other organizations, service organizations, and he had previously been the president of Unico, which is like the national Italian organization.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a national figure, at least among the Italian community. Like, so he's not just nobody, but I think in Milwaukee, he probably was known as being Frank's attorney.
Okay. So
I can't say that 100%. I wasn't there in the 60s, but
right.
that's my impression.
But if that's the case, it just seems crazy that he thinks he could actually win governor.
Mm-hmm.
Because if everybody has that association with him, it just seems like it would be a non-starter.
I'm just curious, like, what he was out, because people in Milwaukee would know him, and he was a pretty big deal in Milwaukee, but I don't know, like, how well he was known in Madison or Appleton or
I would assume, in most other places, people didn't really even know who he was.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. Whereas John Reynolds is the governor, so everybody knows who he is.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I can't put myself in how people were thinking in 60 years ago, but that's all speculation, man. That's all speculation. So my impression is that he was mostly known in Milwaukee, and I would say in Milwaukee he was generally known as the mob's attorney.
So,
but very competent. I mean, very highly intelligent guy.
Well, you can tell by he either had a really good.
He did have a speechwriter.
Yeah, he had
an English professor from UW-Milwaukee who worked for him as a speechwriter.
Yeah, he either had really good staff or he was just a really good spoken guy.
Probably both.
So
probably both. I mean, he was a trial attorney. He was a good speaker.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, you got anything else with this one?
No. I don't know how long that ended up being, but I tried to kind of breeze through it because I didn't want to get really down in the weeds about it, but...
Well, it was an interesting story and kind of interesting to think about. Could this have been possibly driven by the mob? Probably not, but maybe.
Yeah, I don't personally believe there's any real mob connection to this political thing. If anything, I would think this would have annoyed them.
Yeah, because I guess it's just putting more of a people looking into him, which could in turn look into... push off onto the mob. So totally. All right. Well, with that, we can wrap this episode up unless you want to give a little synopsis of what we're talking about next week.
I can do that. 2 weeks from now. I can do that. Next time, we're going to talk about Joe's Spaghetti House.
No, Joe's Spaghetti House. Anything more to it than that? Or just
Joe's Spaghetti House was a restaurant in Milwaukee. We're in 1964 right now, and I think this might be our final 1964. Ooh. It's just a restaurant in Milwaukee with mob connections. Not going to be our most exciting story, but I think it's worth telling. And I believe that'll move us into 65 after that. Like I said, I'm trying to kind of pick up the pace a little bit on the time frame here.
Joe's Spaghetti House does not exist anymore?
It does not exist.
Okay.
I don't have my notes in front of me, but I don't think it existed much more than a year or two.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. All right, well, stay tuned, everybody, for Joe's Spaghetti House. Again, we thank you for tuning in. We do have a Patreon. You can check that out at patreon.com/MilwaukeeMafia or just jump over to MilwaukeeMafia.com. And Gavin, where can people reach out to you at?
Well, first and foremost, they got to go to MilwaukeeMafia.com. It is just an amazing website with some great resources. But if you want to contact me directly, you can email MilwaukeeMafia@gmail.com. I'm generally pretty good about responding most days. And I've gotten some really interesting emails lately. So keep that up. Send me some interesting things and we'll chat.
Yeah. And we will be back next week with the Patreon episode in 2 weeks with another Mafia episode. We thank everybody for tuning in and we'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks for tuning in to the Milwaukee Mafia Podcast. Join us next time for another look back at Wisconsin Mafia and true crime history.